With the NBA playoffs coming back, something we're going to be seeing a lot is every player's fresh new cut. But you know what else needs a fresh new cut? Your lawn. That's why you should hit up Tavon's Lawn Care. Tavon's Lawn Care LLC is a black family-owned business located in York, Pennsylvania. Tavon's Lawn Care, or TLC for short, since they provide each job with tender love and care, has been in business for over 10 years. Founded by owner Tavon Parker, TLC aims to provide employment for underprivileged youth while providing great service at a reasonable rate. Visit Tavon's Lawn Care LLC or Tavon's Lawn Care on Facebook and Instagram to view their portfolio and request your cost-free quote today. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the All In Podcast, episode 35. I am one of the co-hosts, Michael Badzig, joined by my guy, Eli Cooper. What's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. I'm doing good. Playoffs are in full swing. Yep. It's been fun, man.
Yeah, and we had last night, so we're doing this on Wednesday, September 2nd. So last night we had Game 7 between the Jazz and Nuggets. That was a fun game to watch. I mean, not the fireworks we were used to in that series. 78 to 80 was the final score. That was kind of a pleasant surprise for me, actually. I get kind of worn down by the offenses.
Yeah. Especially when, like, Mitchell and Murray were scoring, you know, 90 points between the two of them for the entire series, and neither team even ends up hitting 90 points in the final game. So that's how game sevens go. Yeah. Like, because everything is on the line, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a more defensive game. Plus, like, I don't think guys shoot as well knowing that, like, every possession, like, truly, truly matters in a game seven.
Yeah, game seven, we typically see, like, lower scores. Like, remember we did the rewatchables about game seven, Cavs Warriors, and it was low scoring. And, like, that's why, like, when ESPN was hyping up the game, like, they kept saying, like, are we going to see Murray and Mitchell both go for 50 again? And I'm like, probably not. Probably typically game sevens are more defense-oriented, which is good. I prefer that. But we wanted to wait for that game to be over to do our round two predictions, which is what we're going to do today. So that game has ended. The only first round series left is game seven tonight between Thunder and Rockets. So we'll kind of incorporate that into our pick. And then we're going to pick the rest of the series that are going on. And even the ones that have started already, we'll give a prediction still. Also, All In Network, make sure Beast Gaming just is going to release an episode today. So check out the YouTube channel for that or go to his audio feed. If you can't find his audio feed, it's Beast Gaming, or you can go to allinnetwork.net where you can find links to all of our podcast feed, including Raiden Bliss, ourselves, All In Politics, who has been on a roll lately, and also Beast Gaming. So make sure you guys check that out. All right, let's get it going then, Coop. First series we will talk about is the Lakers. They were able to wrap up their series with Portland pretty easily after that loss in game one. So they are going to be facing the winner of tonight's game, which is Thunder Rockets. So maybe kind of do you think either team beats the Lakers? Who gives them a harder time anyway?
So neither of these teams beat the Lakers. And for that reason, I want OKC – to beat Houston flat out. I don't like the drastic measures that Houston takes as far as analytics. They take it to a whole different level as far as designing their offense. They've completely abandoned any traditional mindset of basketball. And I love to see that fail. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, you know, maybe that makes me a hater. Yeah. But, you know, I love to see a team so reliant on the three or on isolation basketball in general lose in the first round, especially to a team that they gave, you know, or to a team that just gave Russell Westbrook to them. You know what I mean? So it's like irony when you see like two guys who I think have the most like cancerous play styles in the NBA. But they're two of the most hyped players in the NBA, and Russ and Harden, both at the same time get bounced in the first round, and Russ by his former team that he couldn't get out the first round after KD left. So it's just the irony in that would be beautiful. But the fact that OKC pushed this to seven games to me is kind of an accomplishment. And it shows me that they're not ready at all to handle the Lakers. So I think they will give the Lakers the toughest series by far, simply because they're the polar opposite of what the Lakers are as far as like size goes. You know what I mean? Right. Yeah. And play style, where, you know, the Lakers are, you know, obviously a much bigger team and a team that gets a lot more twos, and the Rockets are a team that, you know, obviously shoots a lot more threes. So, you know, the Rockets are going to have their games where they make a ton of shots. But, you know, the question is going to be, well, who in the world is going to guard LeBron or Anthony Davis? I don't think they have anyone who can match up with either of them. Covington might be the best bet. He would really be a better matchup for LeBron, I think, than he would Anthony, but he's going to draw Anthony Davis probably, right? Because he's the four, unless you're planning on throwing PJ Tucker on him, you know, I don't know. But then what do you do with Dwight or JaVale? You know what I mean? Because that's going to be an issue on the boards as well, even more than what Steven Adams might have been. Dwight is going to be a much bigger problem for them when he's in the game. So it's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic works out. And Houston will probably tell you, oh, well, you know, we knew what we were signing up for when we designed a team like this. We sacrificed rebounding for three-point shooting and spacing. So let's see if the experiment works. But I'm going to take Lakers in six over Houston. I'd take them in five over OKC, even though OKC, I think, would give them, like, five tough games.
Yeah.
They don't have the firepower to keep up with the Lakers,
right.
Offensively. So I'm taking the Lakers either way.
Yeah, I would probably take the Lakers either way too. And OKC has been just amazing. And really, you know, they look kind of dead in the water after game five.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, if you watch game five, like, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but like, they're pretty much running their offense through Lou Dort. Like, he had nine shots in the first quarter.
Yeah.
I was like, even game six, you know, like, the offense didn't look great. And in game five, Schroeder got ejected, which, you know, him and PJ Tucker both got ejected. I think that really hurt OKC a lot more than Houston, because Schroeder does so much for them offensively.
Yep.
When they're kind of stagnant, getting buckets. And then, you know, he provides a lot there. Chris Paul was like, he's a dog. He was my pick for sixth man of the year. And Chris Paul was just fantastic in game six. Like, he was unbelievable. Just bucket after bucket. I loved watching it. Got some small joy out of watching Russell Westbrook fall apart. I've always been kind of a detractor, but whatever. I don't need to go in on Russell Westbrook. Same. Like, you know, whatever. He had seven turnovers. I don't think that's going to happen again. And in game five, they looked a lot better when he came back. So maybe there's something to him being there. And if maybe it's not all bad for him if he just cuts down on the turnovers. His shot selection is pretty bad, you know. But also, I think a lot of it falls on D'Antoni too, on like why he even has the ball in the last couple minutes there instead of Harden.
Right.
I think that's something everybody was wondering what was going on there. If it was a, you know, give him a chance to beat his old team. This is in game seven. I'm sure if it comes down to in game seven, Harden will be the guy with the ball. I would think, I would hope, if I'm a Rockets fan, that Harden's the guy with the ball and not Westbrook after that performance. I really like, you know, game seven tonight. I wish that we could have, you know, talked about this afterwards, because I would have loved to have talked about OKC potentially winning.
Right.
But if they don't, and Houston advances, I think the Lakers, yeah, I think they do have a tougher time with Houston just because of the variability of Houston. And, you know, if they get hot, they get hot. You know, it's one of those things where there's only so much you can do if they're going to get their shots off. You know, it'll be interesting to see if the Lakers have to go smaller against Houston. That's kind of their game plan. Houston is to make the other team play to their style and go smaller. They've had some success with it, with the Thunder, them forcing Steve Adams off the court. And, you know, Steve Adams, too, and he's my guy. He's a pit boy, you know, albeit he was terrible at Pitt and was only there for 1 year. You know, he's got this reputation as a big tough guy, but he actually has played pretty soft against Houston. He's been soft. He hasn't been able to enforce his will really in any way against PJ Tucker. You would hope that he would have been better.
Right.
I don't know if Dwight or JaVale are any better in that situation. I do think Anthony Davis is a mismatch in any scenario lineup. If he's playing the four or the five, he's going to be a problem. But you could make the same argument, and we did this when we talked about Portland, was, you know, which guards do the Lakers have to match up with Houston? That's going to be a concern. I do think the Lakers are just better, though, and I think they probably. I think that one goes six or seven. So I'm kind of right. I'm right with you on this, but because the Thunder plays a similar style, but they just don't have the firepower that the Lakers do. You know, with LeBron and Anthony Davis, that one probably goes five for me, despite Chris Paul and all he's done. I'm cheering heavily for the Thunder tonight. I was in Game Six, and I am in Game Seven. I'd love to see Chris Paul get some revenge. Always been a big Chris Paul guy. I know the playoff success hasn't always been there, but I think that he matters a lot more to your team. If I was the Thunder trading Westbrook and getting Paul plus pieces, that's just like that's a jackpot. Like there's no way I'm looking at this series flipped Chris Paul. If you flip Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook, I think Houston's won already. If Chris Paul's on the Thunder.
Absolutely.
But I don't know. Maybe I think just because of the reputations that those guys had, Daryl Morey probably felt like he had to make that trade if it was made available. Like Westbrook is a bigger superstar, and maybe that was the idea. But I think if I were him, and even if I were him from an analytical perspective, which he tends to be on that side, I'd much rather have Chris Paul. But yeah, so I'm cheering for the Thunder tonight. Okay, but we both have the Lakers advancing no matter who they play. Maybe the Houston gives them a tougher time though. All right, let's go to the next series then. We talked about the Nuggets advancing past the Jazz in Game 7 last night. Jamal Murray seems to have figured something out in Round 1. Do you think they can beat the Clippers, though?
No. And honestly, I think this series proved that. Because don't get me wrong, Utah's a solid team, and Donovan Mitchell is a very good player. And obviously played extremely well, but they're very reliant on Jamal Murray, actually, and really reliant on Jokic. You know, for a lot of their game, Michael Porter Jr. seems to have cooled off. So, you know, where's the third option coming from? And, you know, Jamal Murray had a great series, but, like, I think we have to factor, like, who's guarding him when this is happening. You know what I mean? Like, this series, it's – well, we don't know the status of Patrick Beverley, but it's going to be a mixture of Pat Bev and Paul George, possibly a little bit of Kawhi in some certain situations, you know. So, and honestly, I think that makes a difference. Now, I think this should be a much easier series for Jokic. Obviously, he had a tough matchup with Gobert in the first round, and maybe they play through him a little bit more this series than they did Jamal Murray. But I don't think they quite have the depth to deal with the Clippers. And I'm going to go ahead and take the Clippers in this series. I say in five.
I got the Clippers too, and it's a great point you bring up about who's going to be guarding Jamal Murray. It's not going to be Mike Conley, albeit Mike Conley was one time a great defender, or Donovan Mitchell, who's a bad defender, or whoever, you know, Utah has. They just don't have the firepower on defense that the Clippers do. Now, we said this in round one with Luka, and Luka was able to do great things. Jamal Murray is not quite Luka
at all.
And while he was fantastic in round one, you still wonder about the consistency and what he's going to be able to bring. I don't think because in round one, listen, like Jokic, I had him third in my MVP ballot. They were going through Jamal Murray. He was the most important player for them on offense. Like they were going through him. It was a two-man game, but that's not really what they were doing all year. I don't know if they stick with that or if they try to incorporate Jokic more and make it go through him. I think they'd have a better chance if they did do that. But I don't know. Like, I just don't trust Denver still. This is kind of what we saw last year with Denver too. It was not too dissimilar, right? They went 7 with the Spurs and then they kind of got their ass kicked in round two. Wouldn't be surprised at all if that's what we saw here. I'm going to go Clippers in six as well. I do think that they are the much better team, though. I think probably we still get one or two stinkers from Paul George, which is it makes it able to go six. But if he goes five, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Five or six for me. I don't see it going the distance. So we'll both take the Clippers there. All right, now the series in the East we're going to talk about. Now all, you know, just to be truthful, these series have already started. We'll start with Bucks Heat. Game two is tonight. Heat won game one. So they have the leg up right now. This was a popular pick for a lot of people before the series even started. They're taking Miami. Do you think that the Heat win this series after going up 1-0?
I'm torn, man, because you know, all the Bucks flaws were exposed in that game one, if you ask me. And you know, we kind of saw this coming. However, you know, the series are all about adjustments. So we really have to see how the Bucks adjust. I think they need more movement off the ball, even when Giannis is in, you know, isolation or post-up situations, whatever. They need more movement away from the ball so that, you know, like we talked about before on the show, the wall up, you know, concept on defense against Giannis wouldn't be quite as effective if you have, you know, a shooter on the backside coming off screens and things like that, because then you occupy defenders in that action. You know what I mean? Whether it's Korver or Middleton, you know what I mean? If you're getting them on backside, you know, flare screens and stuff like that, you kind of actually increase the spacing that Giannis has to operate. You know, and then defensively, they got to figure something out with Jimmy Butler. And maybe that means, you know, the big question that's been asked after game one, I think Giannis actually made it a bigger deal than it needed to be, was, you know, why didn't he step up and take Jimmy Butler? I think towards the end of the games, he might have to, because Jimmy Butler's a killer down the stretch. And in a close game, if it's going to come down to Jimmy Butler versus Giannis, if we're being totally honest with ourselves, Jimmy Butler is going to make the more clutch plays down the stretch. And that will not bode well for the Bucks. So, you know, I think Giannis might have to take over that responsibility, at least in crunch time, and they can kind of figure out the matchups after that. But, you know, and on the Heat's end, they had Bam guarding Giannis, which is something that we kind of expected, and I think it worked pretty well in the first game. Something in my gut is – my gut is telling me to take the Heat. I'm going to listen to my gut. I'm going to take the Heat in seven.
Okay. I like it. This is a tough one. This is so tough. Yeah, we learned a lot in game one, I think, about what Miami plans to do defensively and how they want to treat this. They played well. Jimmy Butler was fantastic, 13 to 20 from the field, going for 40. And the Bucks have a lot of question marks. Now, Bledsoe didn't play game one. We don't know if he's going to play game two tonight yet. So I think he does make a difference just because, you know, even if you can just stagger him with George Hill, I like George Hill for them. But I think Bledsoe maybe he's even someone you could throw at Jimmy defensively. Giannis is tough. You know, I think the bigger thing is he just wasn't assertive enough on offense. I get he had Bam on him. He only took 12 shots.
Yeah.
I don't see a scenario where Middleton should take twice as many shots as Giannis and the Bucks expect to succeed.
And he was pretty awful from the foul line too.
And he was awful from the foul line, which is a recurring problem for him.
Yeah.
But you know what? He has to be more assertive, even if that means going at Bam. Middleton actually was, you know, pretty good. Pretty good, actually. He kind of kept them in it, really. He kept them in it. He had 28 points. And Lopez was pretty good as well. But, like, those can't be your two best players and expect to beat the Heat. Like, the Heat are just too good. And maybe that's the Heat's game plan all along, is like, let's take Giannis out of it and let these other guys beat us, which is a good game plan, which is a game plan we saw from Nick Nurse last year against the Bucks, and it worked. I'm still taking the Bucks. I'm taking the Bucks in seven. I think that Giannis, you know, and this is what it is at this point. Like, if we want to consider Giannis the best player in the world, he's the back-to-back MVP. Like, if we're going to say he's the best player in the world, or even if we're going to say he's a top two or three player in the world, like, he has to be able to win this series. Yep. He can't shoot 12 shots every game. And listen, it's going to be on Budenholzer to figure out a way. And maybe you take the ball out of his hands to start the offense and you try to, you know, maybe work something else, like a down screen for him or, you know, where he's on the block and they set a screen across, like, create some space, try to get Bam off of him. I think if not against Bam, he could have success against anybody else. So you just have to work harder to get those switches. So I'm going with the Bucks in seven. Hopefully they can figure it out. Tonight will be probably the tell-all game.
Yeah.
So I'll go Bucks. You can go Heat. We'll split that one. And then Raptors-Celtics. This one kind of hurts my heart right now to talk about. Celtics are up 2-0. Game one, they kicked the shit out of the Raptors. Game two was close last night. Really could have went either way, but you know, Marcus Smart hit 5 threes in the fourth quarter. I think they're usually win when that happens. And they won, I think they won by three, ended up being. So who do you have winning this series, knowing the Celtics are already up 2-0?
You know, it's just still difficult because, you know, the Raptors were down 2-0 last year to the Bucks.
Yeah.
Granted, they had Kawhi Leonard, which is makes that a different situation.
Yeah.
But I love the resiliency of the Raptors, so I don't really want to give up on them yet. However,
yeah,
I think the Celtics have more late game playmakers. Between Kemba, Tatum, even Jaylen Brown. And if Marcus Smart is going to shoot anywhere near this good for the rest of the series, I'm sure he's not going to hit 5 or 6 threes. But if he continues to hit the timely ones, that makes it even more difficult to handle the Celtics team. So I don't know. I think offensively the Celtics are better. They have, you know, more guys who can, you know, go get you a bucket at any given time. And I think they cause a lot of matchup problems with, you know, the way that they have this
–
they kind of have a small ball lineup themselves, you know, and with their, you know, that especially that horn set that they have where, you know, Kemba comes off Tatum and then Tatum comes off a fade screen and you kind of like – you either have to switch it or guys get caught on, you know, screens and, you know, things are open. And that's a lethal play for them. That they get a lot out of, especially in crunch time. So I'm gonna take the Celtics, but I don't think the Raptors are done in this series at all. I think they work their way back and push it to six.
Yeah, I'm taking the Celtics just from watching these two games. Like, they have the best player in this series, and it's Jason Tatum and Siakam, who I love and, you know, has been great all year. Like, I just don't know if he's the guy to go get you a bucket against, at least not against these guys. Jaylen Brown has done just a great job on Siakam, his post defense on him. It's been interesting to see the Celtics defensive matchups, how they want to go at it. They've had Tatum guarding Lowry a lot of the time, actually, and they've had Brown guarding Siakam. So, and then Kemba guarding Van Vliet, and Van Vliet's not been great. I mean, he started out last night really good, but then, you know, come fourth quarter, I mean, they had a chance. They were down six. You know, they were winning, and then Marcus Smart hit all those threes.
Yeah.
And then even after he hit all those threes and Tatum hit another three, they were down six. And then back-to-back possessions, Van Vliet had two good looks at three, and he missed them both. And, you know, once you – and it's like, well, if he's not going to hit those shots, you're not going to win many games.
Right.
Yeah, the center battle, which I thought was going to be big, has gone Boston's way with Tyson game one. And then in game two, Williams was, you know, out of nowhere. He was great. It's not looking good right now for the Raptors when you talk about, okay, last 5 minutes here, who's going to go get buckets? I think Tatum is the best player in the series. This might be a best player in the series, meaning whoever has him is going to win.
Right.
So I do think the Raptors get two, even if it's – even if it's they go down 2-1 and they're down 3-1 and they get one after that. So I'll go Celtics in 6-2. But, yeah, they've looked great. They've looked so good. Like, and Marcus Smart's been great. Everyone has stepped up for them right now.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing is that they're clicking on all cylinders, especially amongst those four. The other thing, especially when you talk about Van Vliet, towards the end, like down three, he's pushing the ball to the sideline and – why not take the time out there?
That's what I said,
something up. You know, especially when you're pushing the ball down the sideline, okay, like you're not going to get anything in transition. You still had about like 2 seconds left before he even thinks about heaving that shot up. Like when he crosses half or even the, you know, the hash mark there, I'm thinking, especially if I'm him, all right, I'm not getting a clean look here. I'm going to take a timeout and then we can draw something up to get us a clean look from that spot. Instead of a one-handed kind of floater off balance, he didn't even shoot it. He didn't even go straight up into like a shot. He kind of like shot this like runner. Yeah. So it was just like, I didn't really understand the decision-making there. And that could have been crucial, man, because I think if this is a 1-1 series, we're taken this conversation totally different. But like now it's kind of hard to see, you know, Boston losing four out of the next six, you know, with the way that they've been playing. So,
It's possible. And then, you had that, which was, I thought, I mean, even when Siakam gets the rebound, there's like 7 seconds left. Like, I would have took one there maybe. Right. You had one more timeout. You might as well use it. And then when Van Vliet crosses half court, like when he crossed half court, like you could see he wasn't going to get a clean look.
Yeah.
I would just took it there. But, you know, they didn't, and that's how it went. And then even before that, whenever they were down three before that, and Siakam, like, inexplicably stepped out of bounds, like, that was just so bad. Like, you can't just step out of bounds there. Like, you just have to know where you're at on the court. Right. It was disappointing. But, yeah, like, you know what? Like, when I say it out loud, four out of six, like, it doesn't sound too bad. If they get game three – if they can get game three, so I know obviously they need to get game three because if they go down 3-0, it's over. But if they get game three, then it's 2-1. You know, the neutral court thing is probably going to help them now, probably shifts. I think it really hurt them in games one and two. Like, if we could have been at home in Toronto, like, that's huge. Right. But whatever.
Well, really, so, it's four out of – now that I think about it, it's actually four out of five instead of four
they can
out
drop,
six.
They can drop one, right?
One more game, right. So – yeah, I mean, it certainly can be done. I wouldn't put it past this Raptors team, but, you know, we'll see what kind of adjustments Nick Nurse makes. I think that's where he's going to have to find a way to get the momentum of this series to completely shift, and it's going to have to happen in game three. I don't know how he does it, but
four out of five.
He's a coach of the year candidate for a reason. Did they announce
the winner? He won it, right?
Yeah, so coach of the year. You know, let's see what he dials up.
You know, well, we could go off on a tangent about this, but, like, if they lose to the Celtics here, do they blow this up? Like, I mean, Van Vliet is going to be an unrestricted free agent this year. Gasol is probably gone. Ibaka is going to be gone soon. Lowry's got one more year.
Yeah, I think you do because a lot of your core is older. However, you have OG Anunoby and – Siakam is relatively young. I'm not sure how old he is. I don't have that in front of me, but he's under 23, I would think, right?
Yeah. He's something in his third year, I think.
Yeah, something like that. So, you know, you've got pieces to build around and add to. So I don't know that you have to go, you know, Sixers trust the process mode,
right?
Which doesn't necessarily work, by the way. You know,
apparently not.
See, here's the thing about blowing it up. I don't necessarily know that that's the right way to do it. I think you kind of keep your core, maybe get them on better contracts, and in 2 years from now, so, you know, you get Lowry to re-sign at a much lower, you know, price than what he's at right now. That would free up cap space in the future. I think you probably have to let Van Vliet go because he hasn't gotten his big payday. You got to let him go. You can probably get Mark for, you know, a pretty low rate if you wanted to keep him. Ibaka, probably not. But, like, you can still keep a lot of those core guys and kind of do what the Clippers did, right, after they blew it up with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. They didn't really – and DeAndre. They didn't really blow it up. They just kind of, like, traded those guys for other valuable players, right? Yeah. And then you watch them in the first round against – they still make the playoffs. You watch them compete with the Warriors. And then if your goal is to, like, land a free agent, you want to have a core there where it's like, yo, like, I could really take this team over the top. You know what I mean? Like, this team is missing me. That's the difference between this team getting out of the first round and or going to a championship, stuff like that. Same with the Nets. The Nets never really tanked it all the way down as far as, like, after the failed Paul Pierce and KG and Darren Williams experiment. They never really, like, tanked it down fully. And then even over the last couple of years, they had, like, they had a solid core that gave the Sixers a scare in the first round in a couple of games. And then Kyrie and KD kind of looked at it like, yo, this is kind of a nice core. Maybe this is where we join up, you know what I mean? And we'll already have quality role players around us to be a competitive, you know, team in that case. So – you know, I've kind of lost, especially when you look at what happened with the Sixers and you look at what happened with the Clippers, the Nets, and even some other teams who didn't quite you know, do the full tank mode. I don't know that tanking actually, in the NBA at least, actually produces results in the future, because then you have to hit, when you tank, you got to hit on every draft pick. One, you need lottery luck for one, and two, you need to then hit. If you miss on those picks, you set that process back even further, and then you have no chance at landing any free agents while you're doing that. You know what I mean? So you're literally hoping, you know, that these rookies that you pick pan out. And how often does that really happen?
Yeah.
In the NBA, if you're, especially if your pick is outside the top three, like you're it's very unlikely that you hit on a player outside the top three. So I don't think they blow. I don't think teams should blow it up anymore or fully tank unless you have to.
Yeah. But here's the thing. In a Raptors case, I would. But here's the thing. If I'm a GM, I'm probably not saying I don't want to blow this up because I suck at drafting. Like, I'm probably not saying.
Yeah, right.
even though you're right, and probably if I'm realistic, I'm looking at it and saying, like, the chances of hitting are not that great. I'm probably not going to my owner and being like, hey, like, I would blow it up, but, like, I know I'm going to fuck up this draft pick. No, I agree. But I agree. I think most teams should go through it, like, rebuild without blowing it up. Like, rebuild and still try to compete, at least for a playoff spot.
Especially if you have, like, quality players like a Siakam. Or, you know, you have a player who's been there a while, like Kyle Lowry. And you don't necessarily – you maybe want him to retire there and say, hey, well, you know, hang around, you know, help us out with your contract when it's up. And we can get you some pieces in this free agent class, you know what I mean? And give you one more go at it. Plus, you'll still have Siakam. So, like, I actually get why the Sixers did it. Because back then, like, we kind of went all in on Andrew Bynum. And that did not work out at all.
Right.
And we didn't really have pieces outside of that to really build around. The Raptors still do. Like, Siakam is still an all-star player in this league. I don't know that you necessarily want to put him through a full rebuild, because that you're going to lose about 3 to 4 years of his prime.
Yeah.
So, you know, certainly something to consider.
If you do the full rebuild, you almost have to trade Siakam.
Yeah,
if you're going to do a full rebuild.
Which, like, how do you get value back on a guy on a rookie contract? You know what I mean? So, and a low rookie contract. You know what I mean? So, yeah, maybe the Warriors set number two pick.
Okay. Plus the T-Wolves pick.
Yeah.
Warriors maybe, two plus the T-Wolves pick plus Wiggins, maybe. Right. Wiggins comes home to Canada.
Yeah. Maybe. And, okay. So let's imagine this out. You get the number two pick.
Yeah.
Who would you want the Raptors to take, LaMelo or Wiseman? I'm going to assume Anthony Edwards is going number one with just fit wise. That just makes the most sense.
Not LaMelo. Put it that way.
Fair. Okay.
Whoever the one pick is, not LaMelo. That's who I want.
So you don't want any parts of LaMelo?
No,
LaVar Ball.
I'm good. The more I watched the LaMelo in Australia project, it was kind of all BS. So I'm not. I just don't think he's a sure thing.
Agreed.
And I'd rather run the roll of dice with Wiseman.
And as a Curry fan, I'd love Siakam in Golden State.
He'd be a great piece.
He'd be a perfect fit for them.
Especially when they go to that, like, five-man small lineup. If you had Draymond at the five, Siakam at the four.
That seems like the right thing to do. Golden State needs to – Bob Myers, pick up the phone, call the Raptors. Yeah.
But, I mean, if the Raptors do lose in the second round and you're looking at it and you're like, well, I don't want to give Fred VanVleet a max contract. Because, you know, some dumb team is going to give him, like, a max deal.
Yep. And he's going to be awful on that bad team. I just have a feeling, like, he's a good player, but, like, I think he's a good player on a good team.
Well, yeah, it's going to be like a Terry Rozier situation.
Yeah, exactly.
He's going to get a big deal, and he'll probably get a bigger deal than he did. But I just don't know if you commit that much money to him. And I like him a lot, as we've discussed.
Same.
But I just can't imagine giving him a max deal. And you're like, okay, well, we're going to lose him. Lowry's got this one-year deal left. We're not a championship team. Siakam, if we watch his second round, is not the guy we want to build this around. Maybe they blow it up. I wouldn't be opposed to it if I'm a Raptors fan. I wouldn't be opposed to it. So, All right, let's wrap this up today, man. That was fun. That was a good conversation. Good tangent to go on. So those are our round two picks. Eli, talk to the people about the All In Network.
Yeah, so we've got quite a bit going on. All In Politics, we'll have a new episode coming out here on Friday. Rain and Bliss will be returning soon. Beast Gaming is out now. By the time you listen to this podcast, it is already available on audio. YouTube video will be up by the time you're listening to this podcast. We are also adding a couple blog writers to the site, so stay tuned. We're trying to get some more news articles and opinion articles out there, things like that, with some weekly blog writers. All In DFS and Bets is going to be picking it up soon with the NFL coming up. So make sure you follow us on all of our social media. At Twitter, we're at @all_in_pod. Instagram, All In Network. And then on Facebook, All In Media, @All In Media Network is where you can find us there. And, you know, just overall, guys, register to vote. Vote.org, get registered. You know, it's the least you can do to have your voice heard. You know, tweeting and posting on Facebook, your complaints is all great, but your voice is mostly heard through voting, not through social media. There's no harm in it, even if you don't necessarily believe in the system. What does it hurt, to be honest with you? At the end of the day, it actually probably gets you a day off of work. So why, or a few hours off of work. So why not?
Yep, absolutely. Good point, Eli. Vote, vote, vote. Election's coming up. I just got my absentee ballot application in the mail. So if you haven't started the process, if you don't want to go to the polls and you think you want to vote by mail, make sure you get that process going. It took a couple of weeks. But from when I sent my get the absentee ballot application, it's like a whole nother step. They do not make it that easy on you. They do that on purpose. But make sure you get that process going so you can vote. Really important. Thanks for the update, Eli. All right, guys, this was episode 35 of the All In Podcast. We will see you on maybe Monday. We might have something sooner than that, though. So stay tuned. Check for updates on the Twitter @all_in_pod.
Yes, visit the website, allinnetwork.net. See you guys.
Thanks.